Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Bill Buckmaster Show. This is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill. This is Tucson's most trusted voice for news and information. I'm not only the host of American Warrior Radio, heard Saturdays at noon right here on KVOI, but I'm sitting in for Bill as he's taking some time off. Listen, if you'd like to interact with us, feel free to give us a call on the Buckmaster Live Line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. In the second half of the hour, we'll be talking with Ted Maxwell, the president and CEO of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, about two issues important to all of us Tucsonans. One, the upcoming general election, and also water. As you know, in Southern Arizona, they say whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting, I guess is the right phrase there. So joining us to, first off in the Green Things Socolo Village Studios are two members of the Veteran Council. The chairman of the council, Major General Don Shepard, U.S. Air Force retired, and Major Jane Strain, U.S. Army retired. They're part of a new group that has been formed by Congressman Juan Siscomani to deal with veterans issues. And thanks for sharing your thoughts here on the Buckmaster Show, both of you.
Pleasure. Look forward.
It's going to be wonderful.
Shep, if I may call you that.
Certainly.
We go back a little ways. You're the chairman of this group. They've only met a couple of times, but give me a sense of what you feel, how you interpret the congressman's mission for this Veterans Council.
Yeah, it's really simple. And we spent the first meeting basically saying, what do you want us to do? And he says, it's very simple. I want you to make veterans' lives better. And that's all the guidance that we need. Most of us are veterans on the council. Almost all of us are veterans. Various services. We have Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. We don't have Coast Guard. So if you've got any Coast Guardmen out there, give us a call. But on the other hand, basically, that's exactly what we wanted to do. We had 11 people identified initially on the committee, and we had 11 issues just laid out of things to look at. So we all took one of those issues to get started, went out there and said, tell us what's going on in your particular area here. For instance, homelessness, suicide, that type of thing. And we started that way. Then the second thing, we're getting a little bit better organized, and next time we're going to strike out and try to redo some work.
Now, Jane, you're up serving on the council all the way from Sierra Vista, although you say it's an easy drive. But what's your engagement? You're an Army veteran, and what was, when you were approached about this idea, what made you jump on board?
My basic field of interest is the veteran serving organizations. These are the organizations that generally fall in the category of nonprofits, 501c something. In Sierra Vista, there's many, many of these veteran-serving organizations. That is a specific category that they have to meet in terms of receiving grants because of their work. There's a mixed bag with that. Some actually become fundraisers, and then they send that resources to other veteran-serving organizations. Huge population in Sierra Vista.
Now, that's interesting because I know most Tucsonans who are listening to this broadcast are familiar. Obviously, we've got Davis Month and Air Force Base, which, Shep, if I'm not mistaken, is one of the largest installations in the Air Force. I don't know if that's still
true. It still is. Yes, true.
About 13,500
right.
personnel. But, of course, we have the Air National Guard. We've got the reserves here, Army Reserves. We've got the Army Group up in Marana, Navy Reserve Center. So Tucson, believe it or not, is very diverse military population. Then, of course, down in Sierra Vista, mm-hmm. we have Fort Huachuca, the military intelligence post. One thing I hope that this signal reaches other parts of the area, and I know one of the things the congressman is looking for are some representatives from other areas in his district, Safford, you know, as far north as Eloy, maybe parts of Casa Grande. So I hope if mm-hmm. you're hearing this show somewhere outside of Tucson and Sierra Vista, and if you're interested in serving, you can contact the congressman's office to be added to this group.
Yeah, exactly. What we found out already is that there is an enormous amount of veterans material available. But what you find is that veterans, a lot of the veterans have been out of the service 15 or 20 years. They have a problem they want to deal with. They have no idea who to go to. They have no idea how to get on a base, that type of thing. So the stuff is there, but getting them to know that the stuff is there, so particularly the outlying areas that you just mentioned, are really important to them out there. In other words, people have got to go out there and tell them how to get stuff, and then they got to get here to get it in a major metropolitan area where it's all available. So it becomes a problem for veterans worldwide, as a matter of fact, or nationwide, let's put it that way.
As a civilian, that confuses me a little bit. I can't imagine anybody serving our country and then leaving the service and not being made aware before they depart the service of all the support that's available out there?
There are briefings and stuff like that. And of course, you have conversation with your buddies and what have you. Everybody knows it's there. But then 15 or 20 years later, somebody will say, well, I need your DD-214. And your first reply will be, what's a DD-214? I have no idea how it is. And then you got to find the DD-214, which shows that you are authorized veteran services and what have you. And basically, then the search starts there. And then it gets more complicated after that of the other things that you may need. Later on, they'll want birth certificates, marriage certificates, that type of thing, depending upon what happens. So it's a daunting task for some people out there, but we're here to help, and we're here to spread the word of how you get help if you don't know how.
Now, Jane, you mentioned that you mostly interact with VSO, veteran service organizations. What of yours is your sense of the extent to which they're fulfilling a proper role or an efficient role versus the agencies like the VA or more governmental entities that are also set up? Is there a good meld there between the two?
Oh, gosh, what a great question. It depends. It depends on the viability of that VSO. It depends on how well they're organized, how well they're managed, how well they're focused on that message, their mission. Some VSOs may be better called an association. But some VSOs, and specifically in Sierra Vista, we have a DAV office that's rocking. They're adding their service officers. All the service officers are trained. They have posted hours. Their clientele walking in has massively increased because of the need. So, gosh, it's not a good answer because it depends on the VSO.
That was a very squishy answer.
It's squishy.
Right.
It is squishy.
That comes back to, I think, maybe what the congressman had in mind is why you formed this kind of an organization like his Veterans Council is to sort of flush these issues out, because again, coming as a civilian, I just make a lot of assumptions, and in many cases it sounds like they're not accurate. I mean, you always hear the stories of the struggles people have with the Veterans Administration itself,
right.
And my understanding is our unit here in Tucson is actually pretty crackerjack.
It's dynamite.
But that may be not the case in other areas. So I know one of the things that I support Juan, and I follow his career, and I know he's been very much, he never served, but I know he's been a huge advocate for veterans. And if it's not bills he's introduced, there's other bills that he's co-sponsoring. And he's really working very hard up there to support the veterans, not just in his district, but anyone who served in the United States military.
I agree. He's a really common sense guy. I like him very much as well. And he basically has said to us, look, what I'd like you to do is find out what is needed and tell me, and then tell me what I can do. In other words, do they need legislation? Do they need money? Do they need staffing? He can interact and all of that type of thing in his powerful position as a congressperson as soon as we get Congress working again in Washington, D.C. But anyway, he has a really good heart, and he really wants us to help. So our job is to find out what's missing out there and what can he do. And when you go ask that in a lot of these offices, are manned by paid employees, and then they have a lot of volunteers as well. Everyone that I've gone into has a dynamite bunch of people that really want to help and really want to do the right thing. A lot of them volunteers and what have you. And then when you ask, what is it that you really need? Just the same thing. Do you need legislation? They'll basically say you need to talk to the boss. So our next level is to go talk to all of the bosses in the areas we're concerned with.
You know, I just had the parents of Brandon Caserta on American Warrior Radio, and I don't know if you recognize that name. He was a sailor who ended up taking his own life.
Right.
Tragically, he was being bullied in this toxic command. It was just a huge mess. And so his parents wanted to pass the Brandon Act to help other members of the military.
Right.
In effect, the Brandon Act says that anybody in the military can, at any time, any location, for any reason, can ask for mental assistance without having to go through their chain of command. And it's just a wonderful thing. But they mentioned when they're working the halls of Congress, so often they would run into the younger staff people who were kind of the gatekeepers, and they were deciding what to filter up to the congresspersons or the senators. And that became a real frustrating thing, because here's a 22-year-old fresh out of college intern that's making this decision whether you get a meeting with the congressman or not. And that was not a real good situation. It was a struggle for them.
Well, I can assure you there's no shrinking violets like Jane, for instance. As we found out, Jane is no shrinking violet on our committee, and I'm sure that if we'll get unfiltered information to the congressman if something is needed out there.
Thank you, sir.
One of the things I've also noticed is Because of your shared experience, whatever branch, but because of your shared experience as veterans, very often you meld very well right away. So it's not like I've served on a lot of commissions and committees where it seems like the first six meetings are just figuring out who's going to sit where and what's for lunch. But I mean, with your group, you're mission focused, one team, one fight.
Yeah, there's definitely a relationship between veterans out there. We all understand each other despite the fact that we're in separate services. But you mentioned something a minute ago that's really, really important. Help is available to anybody that needs it. Suicide is a major problem among veterans and among active duty personnel and reserve personnel as well. PTSD basically is a major problem right now when these people are returning from a long time. It used to be that you went and fought a war, you had a battle, then you went back and rest and resupplied, then you go, now you're in battle the whole time you're in an area over there. And kids come back with major problems, and it's always been the fact that you don't want anybody else to know, you don't want to talk to anybody else about your weakness. Now we're trying to say you need to talk to somebody about your weakness, and it's available, and we got pros to help you out there if you will take advantage of you. So that's a word we're really trying to spread. It's a major problem to get that word out.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. We're talking about Congressman Ciscomani's new Veterans Council with two members of the council. And listen, if you or someone you know out there is struggling, dial 988 on your phone, press pound. That will get you right to the Veterans Crisis Center and some folks that can help you. We'll be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Bueller Garcia setting in for Bill. Hey, don't forget, this portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Mona's Danish Bakery, some of the best baked goods in Tucson. You can find them on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, and they're also open for breakfast and lunch from 6:30 to 2 p.m. You can visit monasdanishbakery.com or buckmastershow.com for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery. We're chatting with Major General Don Shepherd and Major Jane. Can I just call you Major Jane? What was the movie?
G.I. Jane.
Close enough.
I thought it was Demi Moore.
No. Your Army, that's pretty close enough. They're both recently appointed members of Congressman Ciscomani's Veteran Council. And Shep, before, in the last segment, we were talking about some of the topics that were identified by the council that they want to focus on. Can we expand a little bit on that? I mean, veteran suicide is just a scourge.
Yeah, it is.
And I personally am concerned with the global war on terror veterans and just some of the things they saw. And I mean, you're Vietnam era, so that was not a good homecoming for you and your comrades either. But what is your sense? What are you seeing out there? What is your pulse of the veteran community as far as their willingness to get some of this help?
I think it's mixed by individual out there. But the message to all of them is, look, it is not a weakness to go show that you need some kind of help, some type of counseling, some type of medicine, anything. Professional help is absolutely available out there. When we came back from Vietnam, yeah, it was a different era, area. There was no support for the war that we fought in. I think the military support among the population is now very high. On the other hand, it's come down somewhat recently. We've had 30 years of war with absolutely no victories in the Middle East, and I think people have war fatigue, and then we got the threat of what's going on right now in the Middle East again. So when we came home, basically, if you had PTSD, we didn't even know what that term was. It was just, I've got memories, well, get over them, you know, and take care of yourself. And if you went in to get help, you probably would get grounded if you were a flyer, that type of thing. That no longer happens. There's confidentiality out there, and there's help available from the VA, there's help available from active duty, there's help available everywhere. And what we're trying to do is help you get over whatever problems you have and get whatever aid it is that you need, whether it's homelessness, whether it's money, whether it's utilities, that type of thing. All that type of thing is available to you if you'll let us help.
Now, Jane, you're from a little later generation. What period are you? Are you Desert Storm-ish?
Yes, sir. I was in Heidelberg, Germany, worked Desert Storm there in the war room of USRR headquarters, but I never personally deployed. Many of them, my buddies did, but I never left that secure area.
What is your sense? Again, I really want to draw on your interaction with the Veteran Service Organization. Yes. If in an ideal situation, I mean, obviously the congressman is probably looking for if we need legislation passed, okay? But also what I've found in my experience, though, is sometimes it just takes someone kicking a door in or grabbing someone by the collar and say, look, yes, you need to pay attention to this situation.
Yes.
Starting with you, Jane, then back to you, Shep, do you see that as your role in this group or—
Well, that's where these veteran-serving organizations come into play, because these are our neighbors. These are our fellow veterans. They're all volunteers, and they work. Talk about grassroots. I mean, they're your mailman, and they reach out. They establish those relationships. They do all that connecting. So, as Don pointed out, it's very tough for this population to ask for help. It's that mixed signal thing. We convince that we know they're ethical, we know they're strong, we know they're courageous, and all those traits are beautiful. Then when they need help, those are the kind of traits that make it difficult to ask.
It's a daunting world out there. I mean, people have all kinds of problems. One of my areas that I covered was homelessness, and I was really surprised to see that homelessness is not a big problem among veterans, but it is a problem among some veterans. And all kinds of help is available out there. There's offices you can go to that will help you find a rental place. Rents are going through the sky. Right now in Tucson, it's a big deal. The federal government has a list of what they will pay for various services, but people will come in and say, look, I've got my rent covered, but I need help with my utilities. That kind of help is available if you go to the right people out there. And there's people sitting there waiting for you to come in right now. And the congressman, as you, your question was, what can the congressman do also? And basically, it might be as simple as you need to go to this meeting and show your face at this meeting and talk to these people and show that you're interested and show that the government's interested and give them the message that help is available out there and we'll direct you to it if you need it.
One of the things that is a big issue for me is the transition. And I hear that so often on American Warrior Radio, particularly with the tip of the spear type folks. And they had a sense of purpose, they had a mission, they had comrades. And then when they leave the military, they feel like they've lost their tribe. And they're kind of without a rudder for a little while. They're sort of floating around. And I think that might be another good topic for for this group to address is what kind of resources are out there to help them make that transition.
Yeah, exactly. I give you a perfect example. I got out of the military after Vietnam, went in the guard later after I experimented with the airlines. I went into Transworld Airlines, thought I had a great career going. 10 months later, I was out on the street. I had no money, no savings, no job, no nothing, no support. And I had to work my way through it, had to find a job. And that's the situation that people can find themselves in this transition. It doesn't always go smoothly. Just because you get out and think you got a job and think you got a future out there, mm-hmm. it doesn't go smoothly for everybody. People have rough spots. We'll help.
Pete called us on the Rincon Ventures Bill Buckmaster live line. Pete, what is your question or comment for our guests?
Hey, thank you for hosting this topic. I was paralyzed in the line of duty in the United States Navy back in the 80s, so we were chasing submarines north of the Arctic Circle. But what I noticed recently with the VA and specifically the VA service organizations that you're talking about, first of all, I want to give a big shout out to the Paralyzed Veterans of America. They're awesome, especially here in Arizona. But sometimes issues come up, especially with related to the suicide issue that you're talking about now, where different service organizations aren't always on the same page. Like, for example, there was a bill recently that said, you know what, when a veteran calls for help, in a suicide crisis line, they don't want to have their guns confiscated like automatically. They should at least go before a judge and get some sort of judicial treatment there. The Gun Owners of America was great as far as advocating for this bill, but other service organizations like the DAV didn't even know about it.
Jane?
Depending, sir, on how that information was flowed, the DAV would be more for disability type topics. I can't have any other answer for that.
Well, I think the important thing about this is that there's an area of confidentiality when you seek help. Mm-hmm. You don't want the world to know. You don't want your boss to know. Sometimes you don't want your spouse to know that you're seeking help, that type of thing. And mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not familiar with but that's one of I just wrote this down. I want to look into this area of gun confiscation for people that have problems and called into the suicide number. I was not aware of that, and I'm glad the caller brought this up. I want to find out.
Well, there you go, Pete.
Gun confiscation specifically. It's gun confiscation without getting before a judge to have your case organized. Because we all agree, yeah, if you're suicidal, yeah, having guns around you isn't a great idea. You know, no matter if it's a $500 gun or a $5,000 collection. But that's why getting in front of a judge to make this decision is more important.
Well, let me look at the list here. By the way, one of our issues that we want to talk about as a group was vet court, and we couldn't find anybody that knew anything about it. So we're going to find out about it, because that sounds like a perfect issue to take before the vet court to say, what are the rights of people that call in and have a gun ownership? What is the process that they go through, and are they legal? Are there legal things that they have to go through and have recourse with? Thanks very much for this information. I've got notes on it right now, and I'll get on it.
Well, there you go, Pete. I hope that answers your question, gets you on the way. Real quick question, is this a handy diver, Pete? By any chance?
Yeah, that was it.
Okay. All right, Pete, thanks for calling the Buckmaster Show. What other topics, Shep, is the group addressing? And are you, just like Pete called in, I mean, there's probably a lot of stuff out there that still needs to be
the things are on the list. We talked about homelessness and suicide, access to health care. People don't know how to get, when you go into the VA here, it's a great organization. Let me tell you, don't hesitate to go to the VA in Tucson. But when you go into this VA complex there, it's daunting. You think you're visiting a small city. Just navigating your way around is difficult. So access to health care is something that's important. Disability, people don't know how to get their disability reviewed. Sometimes they start off with like a 20% disability, and then it goes to much more serious. They don't know how to go and get it readdressed. Workforce and job training. They want to get job training, and there is job training at the Jim Quick Center, by the way, down there associated with the VA, south part of town. Just other VA benefits. How do you use TRICARE? In other words, TRICARE. That's an important benefit that they're out there. And then, as Jane talked about, veteran service organizations, veteran-owned businesses, how do they get help and advice on how to run a business? The GI Bill, tremendous education benefits that can now be passed on to your children, as a matter of fact. And then the other things that we're going to try to find out there. In other words, we want to know what's missing, what's not being done that needs to be done, and we'll get that to the congressman.
I love that attitude. Jane, I'm going to give you, we got about a minute left. You get to wrap up.
Exciting work, beneficial. We need to make sure that all veterans' lives are improved by these efforts.
You're right. She is pretty straightforward.
She's pretty straightforward. And by the way, I eat at Mona's too. That's a great place to eat.
Oh, there you go. There's an endorsement. And just to clarify for the civilians out there, Major General is 2 stars, and Major is Major. So I was having a little fun before the show. Major General, Major, Major, Major,
yeah,
Major,
so Major, Major.
Yeah, I get to you. We got a lot more majors, and they're a lot more important than generals out there.
So. Shep? What would you like to see in an ideal world? Would you like to see some recommendations, maybe even legislation come out of this, or are you more prone to the kind of door kicking?
I think door kicking is really important as a first step out there, and then we need to find out what legislation is needed. Because once you decide on what legislation is needed, it is an enormously complicated process to get bilateral support, to get it through all the way to law, and then get it funded, all of which are separate steps out there. So we don't know yet what we want to do. We're going to collect what we think should be done, get it to the congressman, and see how we can help.
Well, thank you both for what you're doing. The volunteer time you're investing in this, and you know, Jane coming all the way up from Sierra Vista and to these meetings and getting it done. And I think we do have a nice advantage too, in that we do have Senator Kelly, and we've got some other folks that are advocates who've served.
Absolutely.
And that'll make the path a little bit easier. So again, I appreciate what you're doing. And if you have a question, you can contact the Congressman Ciscomani's office. I don't have the number handy, but we can definitely put that in the show notes. So this is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. We'll be right back with Ted Max.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill. Hey, listen, it's time to think about your fall planning. Do what Laura and I, visit Green Things. They're on 13 acres and everything you need there at Green Things. And most importantly, lots of friendly experts to give you advice on what to plant and why and when. They're on River Road just west of Brandy Fenton Park. While you're there, check out all the imported furniture and beautiful art at Socolow Village. You can learn more on the web at greenthings.com or socolowvillage.com. Don't forget, you can give us a call on the Buckmaster Live Line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Joining us in studio now is Ted Maxwell. He's the president and CEO of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. He retired from the Air Force as a major general, another major general. We've got a lot of generals in here today. His last command was the Arizona National Guard. He also was appointed by Governor Ducey to the Arizona Transportation Board and is very engaged in the community through other local boards and activities. Ted, welcome back to Bill Buckmaster Show.
Thanks, Ben. Always good to be on with you.
So rumor has it there is an election coming up.
That is a true statement.
In November. Now, as you can imagine, I'm all about folks getting engaged and voting. I personally, when I turned 18, first thing I did was register to vote, and second thing I did was to register for the draft back in the Carter years. And I take that very personally. And I don't care if it's a one item on the ballot or you know, 15 candidates. I think it's my duty to get out there and vote. So obviously I've got a strong opinion about that. But really, Ted, and you see this through the Leadership Council and your activities in the communities, this really does set the course for communities, whether it's here in Tucson or anywhere across the nation.
Oh, absolutely, Bill. And I appreciate the fact that you had the view on your civic duties and your responsibilities as a citizen of this country on what you should need to do. And I think that's part of the challenge is we've lost a bit of that. We've lost a bit of whether it's the younger generations or not, or we're just not teaching civics in school anymore, which is an issue. There's, you know, history and civics and all that stuff. It plays into who we are as a country. And some people say, well, you've got to be careful. You don't want to tell people what they have to do. Well, of course, we're not telling anybody what they have to do, but as a citizen of the state, the country, you have to understand what your responsibilities are. And if everybody who sits around and likes to complain about what's going on, if they all would prove to me that they voted and they've been an active participant in the creation of those who are making the decisions, then you've got a right to complain. But if you're not actually getting out there and trying to make a difference, even if it's just something as relatively simple as showing up and voting and getting engaged, and most importantly, I'm going to say this because a lot of folks that show up and vote don't, learn about the issues.
Right.
And when you go down ballot, if you don't know about an issue, this is just Ted's opinion. If you don't know about an issue, don't guess. You've got to learn about these issues because quite often, even the language in the ballots don't tell you the whole story. So to me, it goes back to that civic duty. Participate, get involved, and get knowledgeable. Because that's what you need to know.
I tell you, you hit on one of my real hot button items. And, you know, in my day job, I'm a lobbyist, so I probably shouldn't complain because I'm helping to craft the sausage. But
that's two of us, Ben.
Yeah.
That's two of us.
But it's just one that, to me, I hate, and I think we actually had a ballot proposition in the last election that failed that said, okay, I can't remember what the truth in whatever law were. If your ballot item was about pink poodles, it had to talk about pink poodles. You couldn't call it the
correct
hot dogs for all, you know, and then people get confused. They don't even know what they're voting on. And in fact, I had an encounter with a petition gatherer in the parking lot of my local grocery store who asked me to sign a petition. And I said, okay, what's it for? I'm happy to do that. And he says, well, it's to require all city council members to live in the ward that they're running from. And I said, that's already the law. And he started to argue with me. I said, wait a minute, I ran for city council twice. I'm pretty good on this. Well, it turns out he was just confused. It was a petition for the ward-only elections. And I'm thinking, holy cow, if this is a guy out there trying to educate people and he doesn't even have it straight himself.
So we talked about, you know, some civic responsibility and the ability to get involved. That's one of them is collecting signatures for citizens' initiatives. The reality is citizens initiatives are alive and well in Arizona, but collecting the signatures, you almost always have to pay for them. So the people that pay, they really don't care what they're collecting the signature for. That's not a knock on them. They're doing a job. They're trying to earn a living. They just want to get your signature. So often they don't know that detail, and they can't get into that detail. And that's why the law, and I believe it passed, that said the headline, the title of the initiative has to be what it's about. But I mean, that can be pretty broad. You know, it's just, you can't have stuff embedded in the language that does not deal with the subject in the title. And you face that one, and you're knowledgeable about it. I always will ask them to explain to me in detail if they're going to have me sign something. And a lot of times it's just to find out, even if I know I'm not going to sign, is when they're to try to correct them. As soon as they realize you're correcting them, they move on.
And all they want is a signature. I'll say, in fairness, this guy was down out of Phoenix. He was paid petition. And he was grateful for me to explain it, because I think that he saw that as giving him a better chance of getting signatures. And I will say something else that I noticed as I walked away. Anytime someone signed the petition, he got on his smartphone and was checking their registration, because he only got paid for valid signatures. So sharp dude.
Yeah, no, that's, you don't see that very often, because a lot of them will turn them in and hope they, you know, will get paid without the company that, or the organization that's paying them for doing it by validating it. But that's why if paid signature gatherers are getting it, the invalid rate is significantly higher. But, you know, trying to collect enough signatures to get something on the ballot as a, from a community grassroots effort, is pretty tough.
Sure, especially statewide. And I tell you, we've got four competitive races that's coming up this election. Wards 1, or City Council Wards 1, 2, and 4, and then, of course, the mayor's seat is open for a race. And I got to tell you, Ted, when I was campaigning and somebody would come up and try and grab me by the shirt and complain about something, very often my first question to them was, did you vote? And if their answer was no, I mean, you can't do this as a candidate. But in the back of my mind, I said, well, I got no time for you then. If you're not, and I mean, come on, you can almost register to vote on the back of a cereal box nowadays. The ballots are in your mailbox, or should have arrived in the last couple of days. This is easy. You know, take the time. You don't even have to buy a stamp. Take the time to vote. And something else I want to share for my lobbyists, if you don't know, or Don't not return the ballot because you don't like anybody on it. There's something called the undercount.
Absolutely.
Or the undervote. And basically that's a statistic that people in your business and mine follow, where if we see that, you know, 100 people voted but 80 chose not to pick anyone on that ballot item, that's a pretty strong signal that people are unhappy. So you don't have to fill out every race, but make sure you get your ballot in the mail.
And the truth to that undervote, it's pretty critical. You've heard it debated a lot on the radios and others, of trying to, some of the misinterpretation of some of the voting numbers out of the last election that led to a lot of folks saying, well, this can't be right, is areas there were undervotes. And sometimes undervotes is leaving nobody filled out, or if somebody who votes pretty much party line all the way down, but in certain offices, votes the other way. And you'll see, you know, for example, in last year's, if you look at the total number of votes that the Republican candidate for treasurer, Kimberly Yee, got, it was significantly more than the total votes in that treasurer race than the total votes cast in other ones. So there were people leaving on some of the other significant statewide ballots. They didn't want to vote away from theirs, but they weren't comfortable with their party, so they just left them blank. And that's that undervote. And if you do the assessment of it, you can learn things from it.
There's a couple of also important things on this year's ballot, the propositions. One is to raise the mayor and council's salaries. The other, I feel very strongly about, is there's a bond proposal for Tucson Unified School District. This is the point where Ted says, I don't want to answer that, but does SLIC take positions or recommendations?
Yes, we do. We're a nonpartisan organization, public policy organization made of CEOs and business leaders in the region. We don't take positions on individual races where we'd have to take a partisan position to make a decision. But when it comes to initiatives and propositions that are on the ballots, we do. Now, we don't weigh in on all of them. We did not take a position on the mayor and council raises. In the past, we've historically always endorsed those. This one, or supported those, because I do believe the current salaries are low. There's just some things in this one that we weren't as positive about as we were on the ones in the past. But when it comes to the TUSD school bond, and I tell you, there's six school bonds or overrides on the ballot this year. We only took a position on the TUSD one because it's the one that's got the largest impact on our school, on our county, but we probably would have supported them all. We're definitely advocates supporting the TUSD school bond. And I've heard, had a call from, I was really surprised, somebody that I thought would be all over voting for. And they said, well, you know, it's almost $500,000. How can they, the TUSD be so, you know, naive on thinking that the city's going to approve $500,000? Well, here's an interesting fact for you. Sarita's also got one on. And if you look at the details, they're almost identical. Mm. Sarita has nine schools in their district. TUSD has 89, so 10 wow. times. Well, guess what Sarita's asking for? $50 million. Multiply that by 10, and 480 is actually a $20 million
discount. I tell you one thing.
So it's needed.
The one thing I like about the TUSD item is that it is all bricks and mortar.
It is.
It is stuff that our children and the schools need. I mean, I just can't imagine, you know, classrooms without air conditioning. So I'm a big fan of that. I got to tell you, I've got some mixed feelings about the mayor and council pay raise. We'll talk about that after we come back after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. If you'd like to give us a call, call us on the Rincon Ventures Property and Real Estate Management Live Line. That number is 790-2040. Ted and I will be happy to answer your questions or take your editorial comments. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill. Listen, I spent my last 3 years of high school up on the border of Arizona, New Mexico, and one of my favorite things to do was to jump across the border over to the Gila National Forest. You might want to check it out as well. It's fall, the leaves are changing, and Silver City is a small town with a big culture, surrounded by 3.3 million acres of Gila National Forest. You can do a weekend getaway. It's just a short three-hour drive. Check out all the things to see and do. Begin your planning at Getaway Southwest, New Mexico, southwestnewmexico.org. Thanks for that, Tom. And wag the finger at me. I got it right. We're talking with Ted Maxwell, the president and CEO of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. Remind our listeners, Ted, the mission of the SLAC.
The mission of SLAC is to bring together resources and leadership to improve the economic environment and quality of life in all of our communities. And it's the members that give us our ability to influence and to discuss, and they set the help us set the policies. And they also are the ones that pay the dues and give us the resources to go out and try to advocate predominantly locally and at the state level. But we even do some engagement. We've got really strong relationships with all our federal Arizona delegation as well.
I want to talk a little bit about water because that's a pretty important topic here in Southern Arizona. But before we do that, I want to talk a little bit about this mayor and council race because I know that's a sensitive's not the right word, but it's been on the ballot before and it's failed the pass several times. I guess last time it was pretty close.
700 votes. It was like 700 votes last time that it lost.
I know that and feeling.
But that was a little high for yours. You were even a little lower than
125,
that.
125. Yeah. I'm of two minds of this because what's the city budget now? It's over $1 billion, right? I mean, and you want to have good people that are managing that money and making those decisions. And I, having said that, I don't know, given the formula that they came up with, I mean, it's a pretty big jump. And I'm guessing that a lot of voters out there who are not making that amount of money might be hesitant, might be a little frustrated that. My big issue with it, Ted, was that the city charter still states that these are part-time positions. Now, we all know they're not. I mean, people are putting in the hours. But to me, that change need to be parallel with the salary raise.
I would totally agree with you on that front. It is a significant move. For those who aren't aware, the salaries of the council members will be tied to the same salary of the city or the Board of Supervisors, which next year will go to $96,000 annually. And the salary of the mayor will be 1.25 times the Board of Supervisors. So there were some people that were concerned that why is the city tying one of their budget lines, effectively pay, to another entity that's outside of their control, because the city stat or the Board of Supervisors and any county supervisory status is set based on the size of the county by state statute. So you've taken it out of the control of the city. Now there's some good and bad to that, because then you're not going to get in a quagmire where their salaries don't track. Because right now they're at $24,000 for a city council member, and it is part-time. There's no change in the charter language, although I was looking for that language specifically, couldn't find it. You're probably more familiar where it sits, so I may learn that from you today. But it's currently 24 for a council member. Now it's going to go to 96. Significant increase. And one of the arguments behind it is, hey, that they're going to be full-time. They're full-time when they do this. It's a lot of time. I mean, if they've got jobs to make sure that they have enough money to support their family and doing it, it's very difficult to give full-time to a job and to your responsibilities as a council member. So I was surprised to see them go up that high, especially when they were so close last time. Mm. And I think that's going to be the biggest challenge they're going to have this year. But we'll see.
And in fairness, the mayor and council did not decide this. There's a commission that meets on a regular basis and makes recommendations. And the mayor and council basically just say, okay, we're going to put it on the ballot or we're not. So
I don't think they have a choice. They have to put it on the ballot. Okay. So when it's whatever's presented to them, they have to, they have to vote to put it on the ballot, but it's a cursory vote because they're required to put it on the ballot. And currently, you know, Tucson amongst the seven or so largest cities in Arizona are the lowest or second to the lowest paid council members and mayor. If this goes through, they will become the highest paid councils and mayor as well. So it's,
and that's an argument, I think, on behalf of it is it is very hard. I know when I was chose to run, Ted, I'm self-employed. If I'm not billing, I'm not earning. So that was a real tough decision for me and my family. So, okay, how are you going to make this work, Ben, if you are elected, you know, with $24,000 a year? And frankly, because of my lobbying work, I could no longer lobby the city council. And that would be a tough decision. But, I mean, you do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. And my hope is, or one of the advantages of this is, it will maybe encourage other people who have been on the fence, who decided, you know, I'd love to serve my community, but I just can't afford it. And maybe that will diversify the candidate pool a little bit.
To your point earlier, too, about it being a full-time job, I do believe that a city of over 500,000 residents deserves full-time folks doing it. Now, the question is, will this make that happen? Will the current board member or the council members now take this on as their full-time job? Will they not? Will people that run the difference in salary make them be willing to step aside from their job you know, full time. We face the same thing somewhat at the state legislature. They only get 24,000 plus stipends, you know, during the session.
They get that sweet per diem.
The per diem, yeah.
But I have to add, it's a challenge. I want to talk about water, but that's another thing too. Because there's nothing about this proposition that doesn't say, I'm council member X, now I'm earning $90,000 a year, but I've still got my day job at some place, and now I'm double dipping, and I'm not dedicating, you know, full time. I think as the voters, as the citizens, we need that guarantee. Okay, if you want to do this, this is your only job. You don't have a side consulting gig or anything. But anyway,
It's going to be interesting to see how this one turns out.
So we had a little bit of a water revolt recently.
We did. The two members, Sina Kerr, who's a state senator representing the Buckeye area, and actually it's a large, her district's large. It almost gets out to Yuma as well. It's pretty big in that area. And Stephanie Smallhouse, who is involved in some of the rural agricultural communities, they both chose to step aside from the governor's water council.
What was the kerfuffle?
The kerfuffle was they believe that the groundwater proposals being considered by the Rural Groundwater Committee are being baked in as already going to be passing. They're looking for a majority vote. They're not necessarily looking for a consensus. There's a lot of different systems being looked at, but it's really about how can regions manage and measure their own groundwater supplies. You know, the city of Tucson has done a great job with our groundwater management. There's no doubt when we put so much water back in the ground, and that's important. But if you look as close as Douglas and Benson, they both considered creating a system. There's like a whole bunch of different water, you know, AMAs, INAs, and others. But they were going to be put in a system to manage their groundwater just last year. And Douglas voted for it. So the community of Douglas is. Benson voted against it. And the irony is both of them actually take water out of effectively the same underground water pools and supplies. So we're in a position where I think, you know, you measure what you value and you judge it. So I think we've got to get over it, but it's got to be done in a way that it's not deemed totally against a single industry. And that industry right now is agriculture. That's where everybody's pushing. I mean, we forget that 78 or 90% of the lettuce during the winter months to the country come out of Yuma.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it's all grown because we've got the climate that allows leafy, you know, growth during some of the winter months. Not everybody can do that.
Well, I want to encourage everybody to get engaged and track this because it's hard to think of for our community health. Community-wide, something more important than just the basics of having water. You and I were both in a briefing yesterday, I think it was, with a company new to Southern Arizona that's got these, it's just installing these smart meters at their service stubs, and it's fascinating. I mean, I can get alert on my phone if I'm 1 gallon over what I normally would use, and I can see if I'm, you know, wasting water. And I've heard from people that are saving 30-40% on their water bills by using the smart meter, and that's good for all of us.
The technology is available out there for what we could do to monitor our own water usage and conserve. We'll never conserve us through any water issues. You know I mean, but it makes a big difference. Realize we're still using the same water nowadays that we were using back in the 60s, yet we're double the population or more. You know, so Arizona has always been incredible at managing our water supplies. And I've got faith that we'll continue to be this. I just hate to see when people start walking away from the table because then you don't hear both sides of the story.
Yeah, just to clarify, you're not saying the water is that old. You're saying our level of usage is the same despite our population. So we've been conserving very well.
Okay. We're using the same amount of water now 60 years plus later with more than double the population.
Ted Maxwell, it's always enlightening to have you on, and it's kind of fun. You're my go-to guy for the Buckmaster Show. So
I appreciate it, Ben, anytime.
Okay.
Wish it could have been longer.
You'll be back soon, no doubt. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. Don't forget, you can find all the archived episodes at buckmastershow.com. Support our advertisers and our sponsors. That's not the only way, but that's an important thing to keep Bill on the show. And tune in tomorrow. We'll be back. Take care.